Cole sat at a table in the saloon with Anna, Roy Barlow, and Lucas Tate. His face was dark with anger. He had listened to the report that Barlow had just given him and gotten angrier with every word that the Diamond Sea Ramrod spoke. Once again, Cole had sent an attack against his enemies, and once again, it had failed miserably.
Were you able to kill any of those gunslingers?
I can't say for sure, boss. I know we winged a couple of them while they were scrambling to get inside the buildings, but I ain't sure how bad they were hit. They were still moving like they were pretty spry. But Mort Skaggs is dead, I'm damn certain of that.
Skaggs was probably the least dangerous man out there. If you think knowing that he's dead makes me feel better about this fiasco, Barlow, you're wrong.
Maybe I should have ridden out there to give the Diamond Sea Boys a hand.
You already failed just as miserably as Barlow did.
The harsh words made Tate scowl, but Cole ignored him.
I'm starting to think that if I want anybody dead, I'm going to have to kill him myself.
Oh, you're not a gunslinger, Junius. What you do best is think and plan and provide the driving force for all of us. You don't want to risk everything you've built here in Buffalo Flat by engaging in personal combat. Especially when you're not likely to win.
You forget that I've won plenty of fights in my life. I grew up in Natchez under the hill. Nobody survives there without being tough.
Anna might have said something else, but at that moment, an old drunk who worked for Cole as a swamper came running into the saloon. He spotted Cole and the others at the table and veered toward them.
Boss! Boss! Trouble coming!
What are you talking about? Are you drunk again?
No, boss. I was just down the street, and I seen that woman who owns the Half Moon coming into town on a buckboard. She had all them gunslingers with her. The ones who were in here the other day.
Wood. You say his whole bunch is with him?
Yes, sir. And they's all loaded for bear, too.
Cole rose to his feet and glanced at Tate and Barlow. The ranch foreman had gone a little pale under his tan, but Tate still lounged in his chair, seemingly unbothered by the prospect of violence.
I've got a few of the hands in town with me, but not enough to stand up to Wood's whole gang.
Well, the men who work here in the saloon for me will fight.
Cole was worried, and he couldn't keep from showing it. The timing was bad, and he had never expected Teresa Kincaid to bring the war to him. He had assumed that she would stay holed up on her ranch, and that sooner or later, he would figure out a way to either destroy her or force her to flee from this part of the country. Now it looked like she intended to turn that around on him. It was a daring, audacious move. He had to give her credit for that much, anyway.
Get your men.
They're all here in the saloon already.
Good. Everybody who doesn't work for me, get the hell out of here, now!
Customers scattered. Nobody wanted to be in the line of fire. Cole turned to Anna and jerked his head curtly toward the staircase.
Get upstairs.
Junius, I'd rather stay.
Do what I told you. I can deal with this better if I don't have to worry about you getting hit by a stray bullet.
She blinked and stared at him for a second, evidently surprised by the concern he had just expressed for her. Then she nodded and stood up.
All right. That's the way you want it.
She went to the stairs and straight up to the second floor. Lucas Tate had gotten to his feet, too, and strode over to the saloon entrance. He peered over the batwings for a moment and then turned to look at Cole.
It's a Kincaid woman, all right, and Wood and his bunch are with her.
Roy Barlow had gathered the Diamond Sea hands together in a compact group near the bar. There were five of them, counting Barlow. The two bartenders reached under the hardwood and came up with sawed-off shotguns. Those weapons weren't much good except at close range, but within a few feet, they were devastating. Two bouncers were on duty, too, but they were armed only with short, thick clubs, perfect for breaking up a brawl, but not much use when it came to dealing with gun-throwers like Porter Wood and his companions. The odds might not be overwhelming, Cole thought as he glanced around the room, but they were still pretty damn bad. Cole couldn't help but wonder where the hell was the sheriff. What good was Sherman Branch if he couldn't prevent situations like this from happening?
They're here.
Tate moved back until he stood next to Cole. His hands hovered over the butts of his guns.
Be ready to open fire when I give the word, but not before.
Teresa Kincaid pushed through the entrance and stepped brazenly into the saloon. Her long blonde hair was loose. If Cole hadn't hated her for standing in the way of his plans, he would have thought that she was breathtakingly beautiful. Porter Wood was right behind her. The pockmarked gunslinger was small in stature, but he reminded Cole of a small but highly venomous snake. Several more of Wood's gunfighters followed him and Teresa. The rest of the bunch stayed outside on the boardwalk, visible through the windows of the saloon. The way Teresa had walked right into the Colorado Palace told Cole that she didn't want a battle. But he was at a loss to figure out what she did want.
Mrs. Kincaid, I don't believe you've been here before. What can I do for you?
I have come to put an end to the trouble between us.
And how do you suggest we do that?
It's simple. I think we should call a truce, Mr. Cole. We should be on the same side instead of trying to kill each other.
Matt and Sam reached the edge of the crowd as Teresa, Wood, and several of the gunmen were entering the saloon. Jerking his head toward the alley that ran alongside the building, Matt looked at Sam.
Let's go around back and see if we can get inside.
Sam nodded. Carrying out Matt's idea would be easier than trying to push their way through the crowd gathered around the batwings at the saloon's corner entrance. They hurried along the alley to the back of the building, listening for the sudden eruption of shots they halfway expected to hear coming from inside the saloon. It was hard to believe that Terry and her gunslingers could confront Cole without a corpse and cartridge session breaking out. But it was still quiet as they reached the sun-baked lane at the rear of the Colorado Palace. The door there was locked and probably barred on the inside, but an outside staircase led up to a landing and another door on the second floor. The Blood Brothers ascended those stairs, and when Matt grasped the doorknob, it turned easily. He swung the door open, and they stepped into a short hallway. In front of them, at the end of the corridor, was a balcony overlooking the main room of the saloon. They walked out onto the balcony. Movement to Matt's left caught his eye. When he looked in that direction, he saw a sleek, attractive woman in a low-cut gown that molded itself daringly to the sensual curves of her figure. She glanced at Matt and Sam with some small measure of alarm, but she didn't move from where she stood, looking down into the saloon, with her hands tightly gripping the railing along the edge of the balcony. The Blood Brothers looked down at the scene below them. Teresa and Cole were faced off with their respective forces behind them. Sam nudged Matt and pointed to Bo and Scratch and a Mexican man standing next to them, all at the back of Teresa's posse. All three men wore identical expressions of shock.
A truce?
That's right. Neither of us have the upper hand right now. We can go ahead and start shooting at each other and maybe one of us will live through it. But there's an even better chance we'll both die, and neither of us will get what we want.
And just what is it that you want, Mrs. Kincaid?
To be left alone. I know you want my ranch, Cole, but you can't have it. I've worked too hard for it, and I won't let anyone take it away from me. You might as well accept that and let me help you get what you want. The town of Buffalo Flat.
Buffalo Flat is already mine.
Not all of it. What about the Silver Bell Saloon?
What about it?
You let a bunch of whores come in and defy you, Cole. I'm not sure everybody in this town likes you or is scared of you. They've seen Charity McKenzie and her friends open up that saloon to compete with you, and you haven't done a thing about it because they've got a couple of gunslingers like Matt Bodine and Sam Two Wolves back in their play. People are gonna look at that and decide that, well, maybe you're not as important and as powerful as you'd like to think you are. Maybe someone else will decide that it's all right to cross you.
They damn well better not.
And how are you gonna stop them?
So how does leaving the Half Moon alone help me?
It's hard to fight two wars at once. And if I don't have to worry about you trying to take over my ranch anymore, I think my friends here could be persuaded to help you tighten your grip in town.
Cole looked at Porter Wood, who also smiled thinly and gave a slight nod.
With Porter and his friends working for you, I don't think even Matt Bodine and Sam Two Wolves would be able to stand up against you for very long.
Once I've dealt with the problem of the Silver Bell, what's to stop me from coming after you again?
Because we'd be partners. Oh, I'm not talking just about a truce. I am talking about a permanent alliance. We'd have papers drawn up to make it all nice and legal. I'd give you a share in the Half Moon in exchange, for a share in the Diamond Sea. And that way, neither of us are able to work against the other one without hurting ourselves in the process. And you can stop worrying about me doing anything to block the spring that feeds your creek.
The setup could work, Cole realized. He didn't think he would ever fully trust Teresa, but under the plan she'd outlined, he would at least have some influence over the Half Moon without giving up a controlling interest in his own ranch. And most of all, he would gain what he needed to take care of his other problems, the services of Porter Wood and the rest of his gunslinging crew. Besides, who knew what the future might bring? One of these days, an unfortunate accident could still befall Teresa Kincaid. From the balcony, Matt watched Cole ponder the proposal for a moment longer, before finally stepping forward with his right hand extended.
You've got yourself a deal, Mrs. Kincaid.
Terry smiled again and held out her hand.
Mm-hmm. Call me Teresa.
Maybe first you should know what sort of crook you're partnering up with, Cole.
Teresa's head tilted back sharply as she looked up at the balcony.
Bodine!
Beside her, Porter Wood tensed, and so did the other gunman who had accompanied them into the saloon.
Sam, watch Terry.
Matt kept an eye on Wood. He thought the other gunnies would follow Wood's lead and doubted that they would try to draw unless their leader did.
I've got her.
It was unlikely that Teresa would try to take direct action against them. In the past, her usual method had been to try to get someone else to do her dirty work for her. But Sam would keep his attention focused on her just in case she lost her head and tried to grab a gun. The stairs were to Matt's right. Matt and Sam started toward them.
You aren't welcome here, Bodine. This is between me and Mrs. Kincaid. It's none of your business.
No one tried to stop the Blood Brothers as they started downstairs. Matt waited until he reached the bottom of the staircase before he cocked his head to the side.
We've run into Mrs. Kincaid several times before, Cole. I reckon we know her a mite better than you do. Well enough to know that you'd be a damn fool to trust her.
I think I can handle my own business arrangements, Bodine.
Don't listen to a word he says. He and that obnoxious half-breed are damn liars.
If a man said that about me, he'd have a fight on his hands.
Porter Wood squared his shoulders and moved his hand a little closer to his gun.
My boys and I handle a lady's fighting for her. Start the ball anytime you're ready, Bodine.
Not in here.
Cole figured the confines of the saloon were too close, the odds too great that somebody, like him, might get hit by a stray bullet.
This isn't the first time the lady has gotten someone else to do her fighting for her. Ever hear of Tom Thomas? Or a gunfighter from Texas called Walker?
They're both dead now.
She's like a spider spinning a web. Men get caught in it like flies, and they die like flies. And she just keeps on spinning. That's what she'll do to you, Wood. And you too, Cole.
Kill them! Somebody kill those bastards!
Before anybody could do anything, a burly figure pushed through the crowd on the boardwalk and into the saloon. Bystanders and gunmen alike moved aside from the twin barrels of the shotgun that threatened them. Sheriff Sherman Branch glared at all and sundry.
Everybody freeze! There's not gonna be any gunfight here, damn it!
There's no need for that scattergun, Sheriff. We're all friends here.
That ain't the way I heard it. All the talk on the street is about how you're all gonna try and kill each other in here.
Don't be ridiculous, Sheriff. Mr. Cole and I are about to conclude a business arrangement that should make things in Buffalo Flat more peaceful than ever.
Once again, Terry held out her hand toward Cole.
Isn't that right, Junius?
Cole didn't hesitate. He gripped her hand and grinned.
That's right, Mrs. Kincaid.
Please, since we're going to be working together, you should call me Teresa.
Of course, Teresa.
Matt and Sam both wore grim looks on their faces as Cole and Teresa shook on the deal. Sheriff Branch just looked confused. Bo, Scratch, and Hector slowly backed out to the sidewalk. Nobody but Matt and Sam even noticed. Cole looked over at Porter Wood.
Are you all right with this, too?
What the boss lady says goes.
A few feet away, Lucas Tate stood negligently with one hip propped on a table. His arms were folded across his chest now, but his eyes smoldered, Bodine noticed. Tate had been Junius Cole's top gun. Now, with the arrangement between Cole and Teresa, Porter Wood had probably taken his place. Matt glanced up at the balcony. The brunette who had been standing there when he and Sam came in was still there, and her grip on the railing hadn't loosened any. In fact, it appeared to be tighter than ever now as she looked down at Cole and Teresa. The daggers in her eyes were even more obvious than the ones in Lucas Tate's gaze.
If you want to carry out your duty, Sheriff, what you should be doing is running these two men out of here, Bodine and Two Wolves. All they've done since they rode into Buffalo Flat is try to stir up trouble.
You're not telling me anything I don't know already, ma'am. Move along, you two. If you're still in here a minute from now, I'll run you in for disturbing the peace.
Sam put a hand on Matt's arm to steer him away from the confrontation.
We're going, Sheriff. But if it's a disturbance of the peace that has you worried, I believe you're due for a lot more than you bargained for.
In other words, when a pair of devils make a deal, sooner or later all hell's gonna break loose.
Outside on the boardwalk, Scratch punched a porch post after watching Teresa Kincaid make her deal with Cole.
This is crazy. Hell, it's only been a couple of hours since we was burying Half Moon Riders who'd been gunned down by Cole's man.
Now she's going into business with him. I reckon I ought to be surprised, but somehow I'm not.
What is going on? What is the Senora doing in there?
Betraying the memory of those cowboys who got killed riding for her. That's what she's doing.
There's nothing square about this deal. It's all as crooked as a dog's hind leg.
But what about Hardy and Mort and poor Johnny? They are dead because of Senor Cole. How can the Senora do such a terrible thing?
Bo put a hand on the agitated Hector's shoulder.
Take it easy, amigo. We're as thrown for a loop by all this as you are. But I reckon we'll just have to wait and see how it plays out.
Bodine and Two Wolves had been right all along about Teresa Kincaid. The drifters from Texas had put their faith in her, as they would have in any rancher they rode for. So had Hardy and Mort and Johnny. Teresa had spit on those graves on the hill behind the Half Moon Ranch House. That betrayal was like a knife in the hearts of the still-living men who had been loyal to the brand. Bodine and Two Wolves came out of the Colorado Palace. The men gathered on the boardwalk moved aside to let the two young men pass. As Bodine stalked past, Bo caught his eye and nodded. He hoped Bodine caught his meaning. Bodine returned the nod, and there was a friendlier light in the young man's eyes than there had been the last time they'd talked with the Texans. As the Blood Brothers headed for the Silver Bell, Scratch turned dejected eyes toward Bo.
What are we going to do now?
I don't reckon there's but one choice, is there?
Bo walked back to the doors and waved to get Ike's attention.
Tell Mrs. Kincaid we'd like to talk to her, would you?
Whatever you got in mind, Creel, you better think twice about it.
We could think a dozen times about it. Wouldn't make no difference. We'd still feel the same.
Scowling, Ike moved through the crowd and whispered in Teresa's ear. A moment later, Teresa appeared in the entrance, followed by Porter Wood. A worried frown was on her face.
You wanted to talk to me, Bo?
That's right, ma'am. Scratch and I are drawing our time.
You mean you're quitting?
That's right. We can't ride for you no more.
Es verdad, senora. I too am drawing my time.
You'll draw a bullet if you don't watch it, Greaser.
Wood made a small motion with his left hand, telling Guidry to stay out of this for the time being. Then he turned a baleful glare on Bo, Scratch, and Hector.
A man who runs out on the brand he rides for is yellow.
It's got nothing to do with being yellow. We won't ride for a spread that turns its back on what's right.
How have I done that?
Men died to defend you and your interests from Cole, and now you've gone and partnered up with him. That's not right, ma'am. It's just not right.
Isn't it better to stop the fighting any way I can?
Not when it means shaking hands with an enemy and forgetting all about those who gave their lives for you.
I am doing what is practical, what's best for all concerned.
Except for those who'll be crushed by Cole in the future. No, ma'am. We just won't have any part of it. We can't. Not and live with ourselves.
Wood and most of the other gunmen looked like they would have been happy to slap leather at that moment. Only Ike Davis wore an uneasy expression. Bo knew that he and Scratch and Hector couldn't count on any help from the buckskin-clad old-timer, though. Ike had aligned himself with Teresa and Wood, and he was too stubborn to change his stripes now.
All right, then. I hate to see you go after the help you've given me, but I won't try to force you to stay. You all have wages coming, and you'll be paid when you go back to the Half Moon to collect your gear.
Bo nodded curtly. He wasn't going to say thank you. What Teresa had just agreed to was only right.
We'll head on back to the ranch and wait for you.
I'll be there a little later. I still have some things to arrange with Mr. Cole.
Like how to finish the job of taking over Buffalo Flat completely, Bo thought, but didn't say. He figured that was Teresa's ultimate goal. Just like with that settlement up in the Medicine Bows, she would wind up running the whole place if Cole didn't look out. Even if he did, she was cunning enough that he might not be able to stop her. Feeling hostile eyes boring into their backs, the three men turned and went to get their horses from the hitch rail. No one tried to stop them as they mounted up and rode west out of town.
Where do we go after we've been paid?
Back to Buffalo Flat. I want to have a talk with Bodine and Two Wolves.
A grin tugged at Scratch's mouth, the first smile that had appeared on his weather-beaten face in quite a while.
You thinking about throwing in with those two young hellions for a spell?
Maybe. Cole comes after them with Wood and the rest of those gun wolves. They're liable to need a hand.
I'm with you and Scratch, Senor Bo, if you will have me.
Well, of course we will. Glad to have you along for the ride, Hector.
Casey McLennan fell in step beside Matt and Sam as they started back toward the Silver Bell.
What happened in there? I tried to see past the crowd, but I couldn't hear anything, and all I saw was a glimpse of Mrs. Kincaid talking to Cole.
She made a deal with him. I'm not surprised. Betraying folks and seeing to it that she comes out on top is what she does.
A deal? What kind of deal?
They're partners now. Each will get a share in the other's ranch. And Porter Wood and his crew of gunslingers will go to work for Cole here in town.
But Wood and his bunch are even worse than the gunmen who were working for Cole before.
Before we killed nearly all of them, you mean? We know. Everything will get cranked up a notch higher now. Cole won't be satisfied to bide his time any longer. He'll come after everyone who opposes him, starting with Miss McKenzie.
Good Lord. There'll be shooting.
Yeah, a mite.
Charity, Lydia, and the other women were waiting anxiously on the boardwalk in front of the Silver Bell, along with the worried-looking Judge Ashmore. Matt and Sam quickly filled her in on the new alliance between Cole and Teresa Kincaid. The faces of the women fell as they heard the news.
We might as well pack up and leave. Better than getting killed.
Nobody's going anywhere. Damn it, this saloon is rightfully ours, and we're not going to let anybody run us off.
The saloon is yours. You're the one who inherited it, not us.
Judge Ashmore is drawing up papers to see that you all get a share.
You never asked us if we wanted shares in a war.
Oh, damn it. What's the matter with you ungrateful bitches? A charity offers us all a chance to get out of the whorehouse for good, and you complain because there are some risks involved? Oh, since when did life ever hand you anything without asking for payment in return? You gotta take some chances to get anywhere in life.
The other women looked embarrassed, but not completely convinced by her tirade. Charity shook her head as she moved between Lydia and the others.
No, that's not the way I want it. Anybody who'd like to leave can just go right ahead, and there won't be any hard feelings on my part, I swear. I never meant for things to work out this way. I never meant to put any of you in danger.
Janie glanced at Matt.
I'm not leaving. I'm staying right here in Buffalo Flat.
I reckon I will too. I didn't mean nothing by what I said, Charity.
Becky and Kathy nodded, agreeing to stay and help run the saloon and defend it from Cole's men if necessary. Charity turned to Matt and Sam.
What about you two? There's nothing holding you here.
You think you could drag us out of here with anything less than a team of wild horses? Shoot! Things are just starting to get entertaining.
Then all I can say is that you have a strange notion of entertainment.
After night had fallen and all the lamps had been lit, Matt and Sam sat at one of the rear tables in the Silver Bell with cups of coffee and a deck of cards. Matt laid out a game of solitaire without paying too much attention to what he was doing. Out of long habit, both young men sat with their backs toward the wall. Three men pushed open the door and came into the saloon. Matt recognized them immediately as some of Porter Wood's crew. He could even put names to them. Lige Braddock, Chuck Forrest, and Warren Jones. All three of them had numerous killings to their credit. Matt and Sam exchanged glances and then looked back at the three men.
Cole doesn't waste time.
Nope.
The Gunnies swaggered over to the bar. Janie was working behind the hardwood, and Forrest leered at her.
Three beers, pretty little lady.
Matt could tell that Janie was nervous, but she kept it under control as she drew the beers and set them in front of the three gunmen.
That'll be 6 bits, whichever you boys is paying.
Might as well run us a tab for us, darling. We figure on being here for a while.
Charity was also behind the bar. She moved along it toward them in time to hear.
It's pay as you go in the silver bell, mister.
Braddock drew himself up to his full height, which was impressive.
What do you mean by that? We ain't good enough for you, sister?
He half turned and gestured with his mug of beer toward the table where Matt and Sam sat.
Hell, you let a filthy half-breed Injun drink in here and you tell us we ain't good enough?
Nobody said that. I just asked you to go ahead and pay for those beers.
Fine.
Braddock took a coin from his vest and slapped it on the bar.
But since I paid for it, I'll damn well do what I please with it.
He turned the mug on its side and slowly poured the beer on the floor in front of the bar. Forrest and Jones did likewise, tossing coins onto the bar and then pouring their beers on the floor so that a good-sized puddle formed at their feet. Matt and Sam scraped their chairs back and stood up and faced the three gunslingers.
What's the matter, Bodine? Something bothering you?
You're making a mess there.
Yeah?
Braddock looked down at the spilled beer as if he hadn't seen it until now.
Somebody ought to mop that up. Be a good job for that half-breed. Sorry ass, the engine ain't fit for being anything more than a swamper.
I could mop up that spilled beer, but I'm afraid that wouldn't help the smell.
Yeah, it does stink of redskin in here.
No, I was referring more to the inevitable result of the relaxation of the sphincter muscle.
Huh?
The three gunslingers frowned at him, obviously confused by what he had just said.
He means you boys are going to crap your pants when we shoot you.
Why, you...
Matt holstered his left-hand gun and started replacing the expended rounds in the other weapon he held. Sam likewise reloaded.
Sorry about the damage, Charity. We'll go through those fellas' pockets, and if they don't have enough money on them to take care of it, Sam and I'll make up the difference.
That's right, ma'am. Maybe if I'd hit Braddock a little cleaner, he'd have gone down before he got a chance to bust up that table.
Don't worry about it. They didn't give you any choice.
Oh, we had a choice. We could have let them buffalo us.
We could have tucked our tails between our legs and run.
But that ain't like us.
No, it's not.
Not surprisingly, the Undertaker got there before the sheriff did. By the time Sherman Branch came in, toting his ubiquitous shotgun, the bodies had already been hauled off and the blood and beer mopped up from the floor.
What happened here?
A clear-cut case of self-defense, again. You can go down to the Colorado Palace and tell Junius Cole that the odds have been whittled down by 3.
Branch glowered at Matt and Sam, who were sitting calmly at one of the tables again.
You can't keep on killing people!
Then they should stop trying to kill us.
Yeah, because we don't cotton to it.
Matt knew, though, that Cole wouldn't stop. Neither would Terry Kelly or Porter Wood or Lucas Tate. The lines had been drawn in the sand. The killing was just getting started. The sun was touching the tops of the Prophet Mountains as Bo, Scratch, and Hector rode toward the Half Moon. It had been a long, eventful, and rotten day, filled with death, disappointment, and betrayal. And it wasn't over yet. Bo intended to throw in with Bodine and Two Wolves to help protect those women at the Silver Bell from Cole. That is, if Bodine and Two Wolves were willing to accept their help. It was possible the two young men might not trust the Texans and Hector, knowing that they had once ridden for Teresa. Hector started to topple from his saddle. He would have fallen if Scratch hadn't grabbed his arm and steadied him. More gun flashes lit up the twilight. Bullets ripped through the air around the heads of the riders.
Get out of here!
Bo palmed out his Colt and returned the fire.
Go! Ride for Buffalo Flat!
Scratch grabbed the reins Hector had dropped when he was hit. The wounded man held himself in the saddle by tightly gripping the horn. As Scratch wheeled his mount around, he hauled Hector's horse with him. His spurs raked his horse's flanks and sent the animal lunging into a gallop. Bo felt the bullet tug at the sleeve of his coat as he finished emptying his six-gun at the ambushers. More shots sliced the air as Bo spurred his horse back along the trail. He didn't know if he had wounded any of the bushwhackers or not. Probably not, considering the poor light and the fact that he had been blazing away with a handgun. Bo hoped fervently that Hector wasn't mortally wounded. No more shots chased them. The fading light was too uncertain for any long-range shooting. The bushwhackers had had one good chance to drop their targets, and they had failed at that. Bo intended to see to it that they didn't get another chance. Bo slowed his horse down to listen for Scratch's horse in the gathering dark.
Bo, that you?
Yeah, where are you?
Over here at the side of the trail. Since the shooting stopped, I figured I'd better have a look at Hector and see how bad he's hurt.
Bo dismounted and led his horse toward the shadowy figures he could now make out to one side of the trail. Hector had taken a seat on a fallen log. Scratch leaned over him, pulling the Mexican shirt aside.
It is nothing. The bullet, she barely touched me.
It touched you hard enough to knock a chunk of meat out of your side. Bo, keep an eye out just in case them bushwhacking varmints come after us.
Bo was already reloading his revolver.
I'll be ready for them if they do.
Bo stood guard while Scratch took a flask of whiskey and a roll of bandages from his saddlebags. After giving Hector a nip from the flask and taking one for himself, Scratch splashed some of the fiery liquor on the wound in Hector's side.
Ay, Dios!
That'll keep it from festering.
Scratch wrapped bandages around Hector's torso and pulled the bindings as tight as he could.
There, you ought to be able to ride now.
Where are we going? To the rancho?
No. I reckon we'll have to forget about those wages we got coming to us, boys. I don't believe Teresa intends to pay us in anything except lead.
You think she was behind that ambush?
Cole or Wood may have given the actual order to send some of those gunslingers ahead of us, but she had to know about it. I reckon they figured we might try to join forces with Bodine and Two Wolves, and they wanted to stop us before that could happen.
Yeah, farmers like that usually want the odds as high on their side as they can get them. So we're going to try and make it back to Buffalo Flat?
Yeah, I guess. But Cole's liable to have thrown a cordon around the settlement by now. We may have to fight our way through. The other option is to pick another direction, ride off toward it, and never look back.
You mean let Cole and Miss Kincaid get away with taking over the whole damn town? This whole part of the country, in fact? Not damn likely. It took me a while to come around to the truth. But I can see now that woman's got to be stopped.
Let's ride, then. That is, if you're up to it. Hector?
Try and stop me, Senor Bo. I do have scores to settle.
The three men mounted up and rode grim-faced through the gathering darkness toward Buffalo Flat. Teresa Kincaid sat across the desk from Junius Cole.
Oh, I don't see any point in waiting.
She had a glass of sherry in one hand and occasionally sipped from it as they discussed their plans. There was an easy elegance about her, despite the frontier garb she wore, Cole thought. She was undeniably beautiful, and the ambition and even ruthlessness he sensed in her drew him to her even more strongly than he would have thought possible. For months, he had regarded her as an enemy, an obstacle in the path of his plans, and nothing more. He could now see how wrong he had been about her. They should have been working together all along. He didn't want to start moving too fast, though.
Maybe we should take our time.
Why? Every day you wait to crush your opposition is another day they can get stronger. I know how Bodine and Two Wolves work. They'll rally the townspeople around him if you give them the chance. You heard what they did to Braddock and Forrest and Jones. Everybody in town will know about it by morning, if they don't already. That'll give the people the courage to stand up to you. You don't want that, Junius.
Anybody who crosses me will regret it. That's a promise.
I believe you. The question is, do the citizens of Buffalo Flat?
They damn well better.
Then you have to do something to show them. Can you count on the sheriff to look the other way?
Don't worry about Sherman Branch. The only reason he's in office is because of my support, and he knows it. Anyway, he's a small-timer. He's not going to interfere.
Then as soon as those men get back from disposing of Creel and Morton, our whole bunch should go down and clean out the Silver Bell. You've never had a better chance to get rid of Bodine and the half-breed. Once they're dead, that red-headed witch and those other whores won't have any choice but to leave town. Unless, of course, you want to keep them around and put them to work for you.
You're talking about not even making a show of doing things legally.
Why worry about that? You already said the sheriff's not going to interfere.
What about outside authorities? What if the governor gets wind of what we're doing?
That's when Sheriff Branch will earn his keep. No matter what happens, he can make it sound like we're in the right, that we were just defending our own interests. And if he can't, it'll be time for another lawman to take over. How does Sheriff Wood sound?
It sounded pretty good to Cole. He began to nod slowly. She was winning him over. Teresa leaned forward and set the glass on the desk.
Hit them now, and hit them hard. Once Bodine and two wolves are dead, no one can stop us, Junius. We will run this part of the country like king and queen.
Cole smiled. He liked the sound of that, especially the king and queen part, he thought as he looked at the beautiful and deadly Teresa Kincaid. Anna and Lucas Tate sat together at one of the rear tables in the Colorado Palace, and Anna was fuming.
I tell you, I don't trust her. I don't trust her at all.
Tate scowled toward the bar, where Porter Wood and the rest of the gunslingers were gathered, drinking and talking and laughing. They didn't seem bothered by the fact that three of their number had died earlier this evening in the gunfight with Bodine and Two Wolves. Anna looked at the closed door of Cole's office.
You know she's in there turning him against us, Lucas. Junius never shut us out like this before. Not until she came along and offered to join forces with him.
Oh, you're just jealous. You're afraid the Kincaid woman is going to take your place.
Don't try and tell me you don't feel the same way about Porter Wood. You're not the top man with a gun around here anymore.
I can take Wood. Anyway, we're all on the same side, ain't we? I got no reason to be jealous of him.
Both Anna and Tate sat up straighter as the office door opened, and Cole came out, followed a moment later by Teresa Kincaid. Cole walked across to the table where Anna and Tate sat.
I've got a job for you, Lucas. I want you to ride out to the Diamond Sea and bring back Barlow and the crew.
You want all the hands in town, boss?
The gun-handy ones, anyway. Barlow can leave a few men on the ranch just to keep an eye on the place. Although I don't think we have anything to worry about out there.
Why do you want Barlow and the others to come to town?
Cole frowned as if he didn't like having his orders questioned, even slightly.
We're taking over the Silver Bell and getting rid of Bodine and Two Wolves tonight.
You're going to send nearly 20 men to get rid of two?
How many men have I sent against those two before? I'm through playing with them. They're going to die tonight, and I might just run those whores out of town on a rail. Everybody in Buffalo Flat is going to see that they can't defy Junius Cole, by God.
Sure, boss. I'll fetch Barlow and the boys from the Diamond Sea. Just don't start the ball until we get back.
Don't waste any time, then.
As Tate left the saloon, Anna glanced toward the bar, where Teresa Kincaid stood talking to Wood. There was a smug, self-satisfied smile on the blonde's face, and as Anna saw it, she knew that it had been Teresa's idea to attack the Silver Bell tonight. She wanted to strike right away, while her partnership with Cole was still fresh, before Cole had a chance to find out for himself just how treacherous she could be. Anna drew a deep breath. She knew who her real enemy was now. The question was, what was she going to do about it? The evening was well advanced when the door of the sheriff's office opened and Lucas Tate came in. Sherman Branch looked up from the desk where he had been shuffling through some reward dodgers and trying not to think too much about what was happening in his town. A few minutes earlier, he had heard a lot of horses in the street outside, and he stood up to look through the window. He'd seen Tate riding by with Roy Barlow and half a dozen of the hands from the Diamond Sea, the gunslinging half of the ranch's crew, Branch had realized. He didn't know why they had come to town, but it couldn't be for anything good.
What do you want?
Well, Mr. Cole's worried about you, Sheriff. He thinks you've been working too hard lately. He sent me to tell you that you ought to go on home and get a good night's sleep. Whatever you hear, just don't worry about it tonight. Everything will be fine in the morning.
Branch felt something gnawing at his insides.
Cole told you to tell me that, did he?
That's right, because he's worried about you.
The sheriff reached for his hat, which sat on the corner of the desk.
Well, you can tell him that he doesn't have to worry. I'll take a suggestion and go get some sleep. Reckon it'll be such a sound sleep, I won't hear a damn thing.
Tate smiled tightly and nodded. As the gunman started to turn away, Branch couldn't manage to keep his mouth shut.
I saw you ride by with Barlow and the rest of that bunch a little while ago. Looks like Cole's turned you into an errand boy, Tate.
For a second, as Tate's mouth twisted in anger, Branch thought he might go for his gun.
Run home and hide under the covers, Tin Star.
He stalked out of the office. Branch sat there for a moment longer, looking down at the hat he held in his hands. Then he put it on and reached for the badge pinned to his vest. He took the star off and tossed it on the desk as he stood up. As he left the office after blowing out the lamp, he turned not toward his house on the edge of town, but the other way, toward the Silver Bell instead. Only a handful of men were drinking at the bar tonight, and the tables were empty, except for the one where Matt and Sam sat with Judge Ashmore. The lawyer looked around the mostly deserted room.
It appears that most folks think Cole won't waste any time taking advantage of the situation, now that he has some new allies.
Yeah, I reckon most of them want to stay out of the line of fire. Maybe you'd like to mosey back on over to your office, Judge.
Thank you, but no. I like it here. Courage and valor are not hallmarks of my profession, but hell, even a lawyer's got to stand up and do the right thing every now and then.
Casey McLennan pushed through the door and looked around. The newspaperman had a Sharps carbine tucked under his arm. He came over to the table and nodded to Matt, Sam, and Ashmore.
Thought I'd stop by here for a while, just in case there's a story to cover tonight.
Most journalists regard the tools of the trade as pencil, paper, and a printing press, not a gun.
Well, you never know what'll come in handy.
I know you've got a wife, McLennan. What about kids?
Three of them.
Then you'd better go home to them, my friend. That way, if anything happens tonight, you'll be alive to write about it in the morning.
McLennan was pale, and Matt could see the fear in his eyes. But there was something else there, too. Sheer, mule-headed determination.
It's because of my family that I'm here. I like Buffalo Flat. It used to be a good place to live. But it won't be anymore if Junius Cole is running things around here. We all know that.
Matt and Sam exchanged a glance and then shrugged.
Suit yourself.
It's possible that nothing will happen anyway.
Just then, Sheriff Sherman Branch pushed through the door and strode into the saloon. He didn't have his shotgun with him this time. The place was empty now, except for the women behind the bar and the four men sitting at the table. Branch walked over to where Matt, Sam, Ashmore, and McLennan waited and gave them a curt nod.
I thought you ought to know, Bodine. Lucas Tate fetched a half a dozen gunmen from the Diamond City. They rode into town not long ago, and I reckon they're over at the Colorado Palace now.
At a DeWoods bunch, that'll give Cole about 20 men. It figures those are the sort of odds a snake like him would want.
Are you going to do anything about this, Sheriff?
I came and told you about it. That's all I can do.
You could stay and help us, Sherman.
I'm not as big a fool as you, Casey. You shouldn't even be here yourself.
Somebody has to stand up to Cole.
Somebody has to die, you mean. Well, I warned you. All of you. It's on your heads now. I'm going home. None of us are going to forget how you turned your back on the law, Sherman. I might worry about that. If any of you were going to be alive in the morning.
Branch, his eyes full of regrets, turned on his heel and stalked out of the saloon.